This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
We are Dukes and Bell. We start off every day and every hour by saying,
hey man,
hope you had a great weekend. If you're a Falcon fan, you should be feeling pretty good. Look, maybe you don't like every pick. We only had five. Maybe the one that you're not quite sure about is the one that maybe we've been talking about, and that's James Pierce Jr. It's not because we don't think he can play. It's did we give up too much for maybe the production and return of what we're going to ultimately get? Now, if this guy's a baller, none of this is going to matter. We will not care in 2 years, Mike, if this guy's racking up sacks and potentially leading the league. I'm not worried about Jalen Walker. He was one of the top five guys in this draft, period. He's going to be a great player. The deal, though, Mike, is you got value with your safety picks and Xavier Watts and your other pick in defensive back. He's listed as a safety coming out of OU, but Billy Bowman, they are going to use him in the nickel. I think those are two really good picks for ball hawk guys that are going to be in your secondary. And then you go add some offensive line depth in the seventh round. But the top of this draft, Mike, is where your team changes, right? And now Terry Fontenot has done his job. Kyle Smith has done his job. Anthony Robinson, director of scouting, they've done their job. Now it's time for Ra, Mike, to do his. And this is where it gets interesting because coaching matters.
Right. How are you going to use him? Now, we got a lot of guys that hit us up and go, well, don't we have too many linebackers? No. Carl just said, Jalen Walker is going to be doing what he does best. Go get the quarterback. And hopefully, so will Pierce Jr. We've got good depth at the edge position. Tackle, I'm still not as confident as Carl is, but we'll see how that develops. We'll talk about some of the undrafted free agents that they brought in as well. But, you know, getting back to the draft, I saw all these grades, and, you know, look, I know guys have to do it for a living, whether you work, you know, for, you got to provide content on social media or you got to blog it. It's just, to me, it's a study, what I say earlier, it's a study in mental self-gratification. How's that? Wink, wink. It's just, okay, you have no idea what's going to happen. Now, look, if Pierce is a bust, then this is going to be one of the great Falcon disasters. Moving up and giving up a first and a second to get him, he's got to produce. Terry, I do think, had, if we're honest, tunnel vision on this pick. Ian Rappaport reports that the Falcons were really all in, and if they had not had Jalen Walker fall to him, he's of the opinion we would have taken James Pierce Jr. at 15.
Don't tell me that.
And a lot of people feel that is a major reach. So I do hope that, number one, first things first, he just does his work. We interviewed the young man. You know, again, coach him up, get him the help he needs to get to the next level. But he's certainly all SEC. He's got the size and the speed. You can't coach that. You know, other players I talked about last week, I was more interested in, but they like the guy. Now, here's the thing, though. You know, you get tunnel vision on a guy, it better be the right guy. And I do know that, Carl, if you were going to take him at 15, everybody would have thought that was a huge reach.
No, it would have been. And I would have been disappointed. I'm not even going to lie to you if that would have happened. It didn't play out that way. I'm not as disappointed with what they did in trying to get back into the first round. My question is, and look, nobody's really answered this because it's all kind of been ignored. James Pierce had some other issues, guys. Immaturity stuff, but you don't dismiss that when you're drafting a guy this high. And there were other guys that were on the board that had other issues that they were concerned about. And so you say, I'm more concerned about this guy's issues than I am that guy, and this guy might be better. They weighed all of that. But I will tell you, that is everything you're hearing about James Pierce off the field and like, hey, some of this stuff that, you know, whether you're on time or you're late for meetings or you're doing stuff, that stuff can be fixed, but I will tell you, if that's who you were in college, you get to the NFL, nobody's calling you, nobody's babying you and going, hey, it's time to go to work now. You're now in the league. You're getting paid a lot of money. So I hope, Mike, those things, just from a habit standpoint and what kind of, you know, how he approaches this, it is taken much more seriously. Jalen Walker, I'm not concerned about that. And nobody was. So that is my issue there. It doesn't mean that he won't be a great player. And some of this stuff, Mike, again, these guys are young. Maybe this is stuff that he grows out of. Let's hope so.
Right. I mean, look, on the bright side, he's going to be a force and we'll have some edge rush for years to come. On the worst case, he's Vic Beasley 2.0. That's the low end. You know, and even Vic Beasley popped for a couple of years.
He did.
And there was still boys. It wasn't all bad. But that's the worst case. They certainly did their work on this guy. We've talked about, you know, going back into all the way back to junior high on him, the family, the whole shebang. So they did their due diligence. So now we just wait and see. Meanwhile, the third round pick, love it. Xavier Watts, ball hawk. Now, some guys, I said this to Carl earlier. Is there anything we can do other than complain? Yes, they did mortgage a fifth round pick from 2026 because they anticipated a run on defensive backs. Xavier Watts is a guy with the most interceptions in all of college football the last two seasons in 13. Played for Notre Dame, played at a high level. He's also got that it factor, Carl. This dude is a stud. So I like it. He wasn't going to be there if they stayed put at 101, so they moved up a couple spots to get him.
Yeah, look, when you're talking about the fourth round, again, I think I'm not as nervous about those kinds of moves when you start talking about the first round. Those guys have to be culture changers. Let me tell you about Jalen. I see why Kirby Smart loved him. He's a culture change kind of guy. He's going to come in, he's going to produce Mike, but also behind the scenes, and you just heard Connor Riley about an hour ago say, it's not just the player he is, man, it's the teammate. Those guys at the top of your draft have to drive the culture. And as you get, you know, guys acclimated to the locker room, Mike, and your older veteran guys start to show these guys the way, that's how you stay good. It's not just coming in and getting 7 or 8 sacks and being like, all right, I did my job. 404-726-0929. We're talking about the draft with you guys here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, coming off of what was a crazy weekend. I want you to hear Terry Fontenot, this is our general manager, talking about the guy that Mike was just mentioning, Xavier Watts out of Notre Dame.
He can tackle. He can come up and play the run. Again, highly instinctive. He takes the ball away. He can cover. He's a versatile player. So, you know, sometimes you label guys as a box safety or a back end guy. He's a versatile guy that can do it all.
Yeah, and he's not that. He's not a box safety. He's not that dude. And the good thing is, Mike, you know, I said it earlier when I said he's Jesse Bates-ish, because I don't want to say he's Jesse Bates, because Jesse Bates has already proven in the NFL how good he is. But if he comes close to that, we got one. And I mean early in his career here. In the next couple of seasons, Mike, if he turns into that kind of player, man, we might have hit it out of the park with this pick.
Yeah, man. And you talk about a guy who is, you want to say he's like the next Jesse Bates. Instead, in interviews, he models his game after Jesse Bates and all the things that Jesse was in college and in Cincinnati. Some would say they missed that leadership on the defense in Cincinnati. Look, that's tremendous. So we got studs. And then a lot of guys were confused just because of the nature of the position, because Billy Bowman is also technically a safety, but he's kind of like what Richie Grant was supposed to be, a guy that can play corner. And again, it's not just nickel, it's dime. It's basically, you got to have the ability to kind of be living in a lot of multiple defenses, and that guy kind of fits that bill. But that's why they kind of went, although it looks confusing at times, safety.
Who's the guy we spent a lot of time talking about last year, Mike, that we were concerned a little bit about in our secondary? We love his fight. I'm talking
Clark Phillips
is, and people were asking me, is this guy Clark Phillips? And I was like, well, I understand why you might say that. I'm curious to see what the plan is there. Clark's still on his roster, guys. He's still a guy that they believe in.
Right.
But when you talk about, you know, drafting this guy, he can do similar things when we talk about that depth role of moving him around. And so, you know, we got Phillips. We got Bowman. You know, obviously Mike Hughes, we had on a great interview earlier with Josh Kendall, who said he believes in Mike Hughes probably more than Falcon fans. The metrics don't lie. He was one of the best corners in the league. The problem is when you're giving up all the yards we were giving up, Mike, you got those miscommunications in the secondary, it looks worse than what he actually played.
Right, and that's where we get into, you know, I mean, D. Alford got released. He let go. They didn't re-sign him. But D. Alford was a guy that was one of those dudes that looked a little confused at times. But that goes back to, you know, the complimentary football. Without any pressure up front, quarterback can sit there and basically pick you apart, which he did much of the season against that secondary. But you're right, Hughes, he measures out as one of the top 40 corners. You know, figure 2 per team, 32, do the math,
right? That's right.
So, I mean, I know that's the PFF stuff, we're off in the weeds, but to Josh Kendall's point, yeah, he's not as bad as you expect. Meanwhile, Jack Nelson goes 7th. Don't know much about him other than he's a big offensive lineman from Wisconsin who's got a ton of starts in the Big Ten. So kind of hopefully he can make the team. It's kind of iffy there as a seventh rounder. And then the guys that I'm kind of intrigued by, Carl, because some of these dudes, Kobe Bryant, I mocked a couple of times, corner from Kansas, who's got some good ball hawking ability. You've got a guy that some folks may or may not know about, and this dude is Nick Nash, and this is a guy who's led the league, or led all of college football, receiving yards, receptions, and touchdowns. He was undrafted because he doesn't have breakaway speed. He's just one of those dudes who gets open. So you want to say it or I'll say it. Coach's son, great route runner, real gym rat, plucky, but he does have some size. He's not tiny. But it is interesting, though, because that's one of those dudes that you could say, hey, maybe this guy has a chance to kind of be complimentary to Drake London and to Darnell Mooney. What's up, Darnell?
What's I'll
beat
up?
You to it.
What's up?
And you know, and then you have a guy that maybe can find some seams and get loose. And if Pitts comes out and does his thing, maybe you found your typical, well, only the Patriots seem to make it work, or you know, a guy like a Hunter Renfrow, but he's taller than that. But a guy that can just get open for you and be a guy that moves the chains.
Yeah, I agree. Look, Darnell can stretch the field. Drake's going to be in there as well. And you know, they're already talking about picking up his fifth-year option. Duh. You add, should I, Mike, you said it, but I don't even know if I want to say it. You add Pitts in there.
Uh-huh.
And to your point, like that he could fit a role for our team, especially on situational stuff. There's no debating it. That's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out and if he's able to make the team.
And Georgia Tech tackle, he was third team all ACC. Jordan Williams has been signed by the Falcons. These are all guys that'll be in camp and they get paid. And now it's just a matter of they make the team.
I want you to hear Jeff Ulbrich, the defensive coordinator for our Falcons, talking about Jalen Walker. This is the best thing he said all weekend to me. Where are we playing him? What's his role going to be? I don't want to hear, oh, he can do 80 million things. That's been cleared up. Here's our DC.
They'll both start as edge elements. So they're going to work as outside linebacker / edge / defensive end. Like I said earlier, you know, we're going to be versatile and we're going to be multiple. So. But that's where they're going to start. You know, on first and second down, I want, especially Jalen, to really have an opportunity to just master playing on the edge, because I think there's something there that's really special. Give him an opportunity just to have one home initially and become as good as he can at that, you know. And then from a third down perspective, we can get creative with him, and that'll be part of his superpower.
So you brought up Lawrence Taylor earlier. Do you guys not think Lawrence Taylor was versatile? But he was great at coming off the edge.
Strip sack.
That's what he did. And you know what? The Giants were smart enough, and his coaches, and he had great ones, do what you've been doing. That's what we're going to do with Jalen, and that was the best thing I heard all weekend from Jeff Ulbrich.
Right, and Jalen had, you know, not that he had a problem with it, but the comparisons being a slightly smaller version of Micah Parsons, yeah, you make that work. Also, Jeff Ulbrich, unfortunately, having to answer some questions probably there at Flowery Branch, which had a lot of the national media kind of losing their mind. The Shedeur Sanders prank, unfortunately, involves the Falcons. We'll address that later in the show.
Coming up, though, we're going to talk to our man, Grant McCauley. Braves back in action tonight. Man, you got to take care of business in Colorado. They won another series, and believe it or not, kind of right back in the mix. It's Dukes and Bell. All right, let's talk to our buddy Grant McCauley. Braves win Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday we lose, but we stack another series. And Grant, all of a sudden, the standings look a little better than what they did a few weeks ago. And lo and behold, we've got the Rockies on the schedule here for the next few days. Things are looking up for our Braves. How are you feeling so far about what you saw on this particular start of this road trip?
Yeah, I mean, you got to feel a lot better about really what we've seen in the last three series, because you knew it was in there. You knew they were capable of doing it. But the question was when and, you know, exactly how they were going to get it done. And we've started to see the offense doing what it needs to do to help make some of these games infinitely more winnable. You're not going to win them all. But, yeah, if you keep winning series, you're going to be in a pretty good place. And I feel like the Braves have finally started to click in a lot of different ways. Certain hitters, I feel like, got healthy on the homestand, not healthy physically, but healthy at the plate. And that certainly makes a difference. So there are, of course, a lot of things we can talk about with the pitching staff. There are still works in progress that they've got to figure out. But overall, you have to like the brand of baseball they're playing the last week and a half a lot more than, say, the first 2 to 3 weeks of the year.
Yeah, Grant, I thought it was great to see the bats come alive. That Saturday game was just bananas. I was talking about it with Carl to see a guy hit four home runs for the opposing team, and you still were able to get the win. Again, Grant Holmes who just served it up, and then Iglesias. But good to see the bats come alive. Is this what we should expect from the pitching staff, though? It's just Schwellenbach struggling, too, a little bit.
Yeah, he is a little bit. But I feel like, you know, baseball being the game of adjustments that it is, Schwellenbach is a guy that lives in the strike zone. And while he does have six pitches and he does have great stuff, I feel like, and from kind of listening and talking to a few people, that – you know, teams are looking to get maybe more aggressive with him and jump on early hittable pitches in the count so that he can't get to the other three, four, five pitches in an at-bat. Not that he's trying to use all six all the time, but trying to figure out what his tendencies are and, you know, crack the riddle, if you will, because that's kind of what Schwellenbach is. But I think that he's a heady pitcher with a great arsenal, and he's going to kind of sort these things out. But there will still be some growing pains. I mean, we saw it early on last year when he came up, and you kept hearing about, okay, well, this guy, he's really got the pitches, but, you know, can he be consistent? And then he's all of a sudden found consistency, and his arsenal got even better. So I think he can sort it out. As far as the rest of the staff, I liked what I saw from Chris Sale. That was much needed. I still think he's going to get a little bit more efficient, a little bit more consistent as he goes along. And for Grant Holmes, you know, more or less, I mean, sometimes, and I talked about this on From the Diamond this weekend, you know, the other guys get a say in it, too. And Eugenio Suarez, for whatever reason, was just out of his mind that day. And the third homer, to me, I know that a lot of folks, I mean, myself included, were like, kind of stop throwing this guy strikes. But, you know, two outs, base is clear. You're not walking him, so you just kind of go after him. But it just seemed like Suarez was in a can't-miss kind of night, and he did not miss. But fortunately, the Diamondbacks were unable to do their part of the bargain, so they turned Eugenio Suarez into Bob Horner. So Braves fans will probably know that deep cut, because the Braves have had a four-homer guy and still lost the game. So some crazy things happen in the game of baseball. That's why we watch it. That's why we play the 162. And I think this weekend was kind of a microcosm of that, good, bad, and indifferent.
Nice Bob Horner reference. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about Verdugo. He's one of my favorites. Verdugo and Harris. What's up with the miscommunication? We don't see that with our squad. You know, it's a rare occasion. But that was something else that played out in this game that we can look back at, right?
Yeah, I mean, those are the little things, right? But you've got guys that, you know, keep in mind, Alex Verdugo, he's a solid fielder, and obviously we know what Michael Harris is. But, you know, you don't get a lot of time to get to know each other because you basically are saying, hey, how are you? Okay, let's go play a baseball game as soon as Verdugo got called up. So I think they'll clean that kind of stuff up. It's going to happen from time to time. But, you know, by and large, those are two guys as well that I'll point at and say, you're looking for reasons why the Braves are winning some games here lately? How about Verdugo in the leadoff spot and Michael Harris really sorting some stuff out? I went back and looked at this, the finale in Toronto, and I'm sure we talked about this. Michael Harris went to the plate four times and struck out four times. Since then, in nearly 40 plate appearances, he has struck out twice.
Wow.
So he has really sorted some things out. He's making much better swing decisions, and sometimes that's just what it takes, is that little adjustment, and all of a sudden that confidence starts to snowball, that plan is executed a little bit better, and a guy gets locked in. And I think we're seeing that from Michael Harris and Verdugo. I mean, again, you know, we've seen the moves that the Braves have made this weekend that we can talk about a little bit in advance of the Rockies series, but he has played his way into being the starting left fielder thanks to Jurickson Profar's suspension and the fact that Jared Kelnick, Brian De La Cruz, neither of them could do much offensively speaking. That's opened up the door for him, and I think he's taken that job and running with it. And the Braves have been kind of energized since he showed up. They're winning some baseball games, so you got to give credit where credit's due.
I know, Grant, I talked about this last week. I asked you about Ozzie Albies and some of these clutch at-bats. Man, he is just really having a hard time getting guys in when they're on. And I know, unfortunately, last night there was the top where they left so many guys on base, and then the bottom thing is with the fielding situation Carl just referenced. But, man, Ozzie came up snake eyes again.
Yeah, he did. And, you know, I think he had a big hit the day before, but those big hits have been few and far between. And Albies is 2-for-16 with runners in scoring position. I know that stat has been thrown out there a lot in the past couple of days. And this is just another example of, you know, to maybe a greater extent, because your expectations are much higher with Ozzie Albies, but it just seems like the ball will find you, whether that's in the field or whether it's, hey, your turn with two outs and the runners on. This was a thing for Orlando Arcia last year. It felt like if the Braves had a rally and there were two outs and two men on, Orlando Arcia was the guy that was up there with the bat in his hands, and this year it's Ozzie Albies. Now, if you're telling me or asking me which one of those guys I'm going to pick in those opportunities to give more plate appearances to, it's Ozzie. He's going to figure it out, but right now, as some Braves hitters have the last couple of years especially, he's just kind of going through it. He's going to have to sort all of that out, but over the long course of a baseball season, and I just want to kind of harken back to, think about what we watched the first 7 or 10 games and what we've watched the last 10 games, things can certainly change for players and for the team. So you just got to, you know, grit your teeth, do the work, and get through it. And Ozzie Albies has done that over the course of his career.
Grant, I was being a little bit of a smart aleck earlier when Mike brought up Ian Anderson back off of waivers. And and I said, what year is this? It's 2025. What are we doing here? Explain to me best terms you can. I'm not saying you're Alex Anthopoulos here, but what are we doing by trying to bring guys back, you know, whether it's him, Rosario, or anybody else?
Well, I think with both of these guys, we're talking about short-term solutions, and you know, it's you know, you have familiarity with these guys, and that's really why they're getting the call here. The Braves didn't necessarily want to just have to cut ties with Ian Anderson this spring. They would have loved to have said, okay, you know, you're not where you need to be. You're not, you know, you're walking too many guys. Let's go sort it out in AAA Gwinnett.
Couldn't go down.
But he was out of options, so they couldn't do that exactly. So this will be a case where, yep, they bring him in. He's probably just going to serve as an extra body. And if a game gets, you know, lopsided one way or another, he might be asked to cover an inning or two, or be that multiple inning guy that, you know, just mops up if that is the case, which you would hope against the, 4-23 Rockies, that you're not having to use your guy to come in and mop up because you're in, you know, that kind of situation. But to make a long story short, I think that they would like to get Ian Anderson back in the system. They would like to probably pass him through waivers and be able to assign him to the minors and sort some things out with him there. But for right now, I think it's just about taking a flyer. For Eddie Rosario, I think it's pop off the bench. He certainly has that. He's been hitting extremely well at AAA, only played in a couple of games with the Dodgers, was 1-for-4, I believe, so not much of the big leagues. But they know Eddie, they like Eddie, and they'll see if he's able to just be that bench guy that makes a little bit more sense than Jared Kelnick sitting and not playing and not getting at bats, because Jared needs to go figure some stuff out. I think we've known that for a while. It's been confirmed this season that, you know, he really hasn't cracked the code. And it's fair to ask if he's going to be able to do it at this point, because he's lost the opportunity to get playing time, even when you had major players out, and there should be nothing but opportunity for a guy like that. He just wasn't able to take it and run with it. So you have to make moves, and I think this is just one of those minor moves right now, and hoping that when you get Ronald Acuña Jr. back, things will certainly normalize there and have significant upside over what they've been trying to do cobbling this outfield together.
What is that? I mean, Kelnick, for the guys who don't know the backstory, 6th overall pick for the Mets, then he gets traded. So, yeah, so three different organizations, and they do have the salary control. I mean, is it between the ears, you think, with him, or is it just the skills just aren't there consistently?
Yeah, no, the skills are there. I feel like this is a very talented, as they say in the scouting world, very toolsy player. I mean, he can hit. And his amateur career, high school career, he could hit for average. He could hit for power. He can run the bases well. He can field. He's got a good arm. I mean, it's everything you want to see. It's kind of like, and I hate this because I don't enjoy the movie because I think it's a little bit farcical, but you know when they're sizing up Billy Bean in a flashback of Moneyball?
Yeah.
That's kind of, that's Jared Kelnick too. It's everything is there to like. What's not to like? And he's been part of a couple of big trades now at this point, but he just hasn't been able to figure it out at the big league level. He's still young. He's still controllable. The Braves would love to see him sort everything out, but you look at those numbers, they don't lie. And as the Scott Steiner promo goes, they spell disaster right now for his big league career. So if he's able to figure it out in Gwinnett, that would be a huge plus for the Braves because they would like to get something out of that. And Jared Kelnick, I do think he plays the game hard, and he's the guy that you want to root for, that you want to see succeed, but he's got to figure it out himself.
All right. Standings look good, or much better, even though we're 6.5 back. I mean, like, seriously, if we handle business, sweep Colorado, get some help, you don't know how this thing looks before they come back home, and that's the good news. We're playing the worst team in the majors. Listen, there are no gimmies, but this is as much as a gimme as you're going to get all season long playing the Rockies with where they are right now. So things looking up for the Braves. We still have questions, guys, but again, we're not a complete team, Grant, and I think that's your message, right? We're still not a complete team yet.
Yeah, until you got number 13 batting leadoff and getting five plate appearances a night, you're certainly not complete yet, and I do think that we are nearing the time where Ronald is going to be heading out on that rehab assignment. I think it could happen this week.
Let's go!
I haven't gotten any full indications on where exactly it'll be or when, but from what I understand, that they are targeting getting him out there, because we're at the end of April now. We're talking about coming back in early, mid-May. Well, it's time to get him out there and get him back. So if you are living within driving distance of a Braves affiliate, you might want to be on standby for when that announcement comes out. And go see Ronald Acuña Jr. getting himself ready to come back and help the Braves out.
The good news is we're inching towards 500. So, I mean, you know, I mean, we're not going to remember what we did in April. Just those first 2 weeks.
Series, we're brutal, right? Exactly. Be at 500.
Exactly.
Good stuff. Grant, thanks so much. We'll talk to you tomorrow, brother.
You got it, guys. Take care.
Hey, guys, be sure to listen to The Steakhouse all week long for our annual Spasadel Mother's Day giveaway. They're giving away five $250 certificates, each including a 60-minute Swedish massage with her choice of rose or lavender body butter, followed by a floral facial. This is all going on, man. You can pamper mom on Mother's Day with a gift certificate to Spasadel for all that moms do. Make sure you listen to The Steakhouse all week long. They'll be giving those certificates out. Hey, we're coming back. I'm going to tell you something you're not going to hear anywhere else. And we got to talk about the other story that, well, we really didn't want to talk about. Right. It's Dukes and Bell. It is Dukes and Bell Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. A couple of things that we've got to talk about. One of them is what happened with Shedeur Sanders. And Mike and I were discussing this. We're going to get into it. But before we do, Mike, let's rehash our conversation about the other big story that our Falcon organization had to deal with. And that is Jeff Ulbrich's son playing a prank on Shedeur Sanders. The video got out there. And, again, I want to say this. Jack. He apologized, called. Shedeur Sanders took his call. Right. I thought Shedeur Sanders guy showed a lot of class in the way that he handled this this whole situation. He could have been a jerk, and rightfully so, if that was anybody else. But he took the call. Apologies have been issued. The Falcons have put out a statement saying no action is going to be taken towards Jeff Ulbrich. And I said earlier, this is not Jeff's fault. And I know that people want to really say he is responsible. Yes, you are responsible for your children. I understand that. But I don't think he went home at any point during this process and went, you know, I'm really concerned about somebody, especially my son, getting into my stuff and finding out numbers. I don't think that was the concern. Either way, Mike, we had a spirited conversation earlier about this, but I think the best news for Falcon fans, and this is where we should be, guys, no punishment. NFL, we're not losing draft picks. Nobody was killed, okay? It was a dumb prank. I get it. But for me, this is kind of where I've been today, and that is for Jeff Ulbrich, everybody says, oh, well, he's responsible. And, Mike, you've been saying that people want to punish this young man, and I'm like, well, what are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of arguments that are going on, and some have nothing to do with what happened. I just think that a lot of talking heads, whether it's, ESPN or a lot of guys on social media, I mean, they want consequences. I mean, I get it. Yeah, it's awful. I mean, Shedeur Sanders is having an awful weekend because the perception – I mean, the only guy that had a worse weekend than him was Mel Kiper. I thought he was going to have a stroke on TV because he was losing his mind. But, I mean, guys, two things. Shedeur Sanders, and Carl's going to tell you something about what happened at the draft, which will blow your mind here in a second. He's got some inside information on. But if you go back to the timeline, I thought, yeah, they big-time teams at the Combine. They felt there were certain teams they wanted to play for. And look, I get it. Eli Manning and his family, they've got the Chargers to make a trade with the Giants. John Elway forced his son's hand. His dad, Jack Elway, got him out of Baltimore from a terrible ownership group. So it's not like it's unprecedented. And it's like, well, the white guys did it. Why can't a black guy do it? Well, here's the thing. You got to hear how this whole thing went down. Because there is a way that you go and do this, and arrangements were made, discussions were had. Jack Elway basically hated Frank Kush, who's never let his son play for him. Go back, if you know the history of that dysfunctional organization, it's kind of apples to oranges. But first things first, Shedeur Sanders, guys, made $5.1 million in NIL at Colorado. So, I mean, he is going to have a chance to make a paycheck in the NFL. I don't know how difficult that's going to be from where he's going to be on the depth chart in Cleveland. Mm. But, I mean, the guy who went first in the NFL draft was a black quarterback named Cam Ward, who nobody's talking about. It's literally like the guy, have you ever seen a draft where the guy who goes number one is literally a non-factor in this? Now, again, Shedeur and his family, they've added the hubris and the hype to all this, and I get it. And I'm not excusing what happened with Ulbrich's son. I think it's idiotic. And by the way, you're messing with dad's money. You've embarrassed your father. You've embarrassed the Falcons organization. I know what it's like to embarrass that organization and have an apology written in your behalf. So it can get really bad, and it's awkward. But people, I mean, death threats and all this nuts, come on, get some damn perspective. Okay, yes, it's a childish prank, and it's very immature. But, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, if the young man ever wants to work in the NFL, Carl, safe to say, and I don't know what Jack's Ulbrich's plans are in the future, that door's probably closed to him. But everything else, I think, is just over-the-top hype.
It is. And the thing that I think is disturbing, or at least was frustrating for most people, with a little common sense, is that you disrespected Shedeur and the work that goes into getting to this point and his moment. Didn't matter when he got drafted, it's still his moment. And that was not thought about at all. And so this is a nasty prank that hopefully, again, as I said all day, a teachable moment for Jeff Olbrich and the Olbrich family and for his son. That's what I would want if it was my kid. I wouldn't want him, you know, spanked in the town square, okay? So with all of that said, let's shift gears, Mike, and talk about Shador here real quick, because he goes in the fifth round to the Cleveland Browns. And, you know, there were multiple teams, guys, that were going to take Shador Sanders earlier in this draft. Facts. The problem was, as some of these teams called, and I gave an example of one of them earlier, where he's on the phone, and this is firsthand knowledge, guys, and the people he's on the phone with are basically saying, hey, we're coming up. We got some people. We're thinking about wanting to take you in. And the response was, I'm really not a Northwest guy. That same
How
team.
How do you say that?
That same team took a guy out of Alabama at quarterback before Shador was drafted in the third round. There were another situation where a general manager is talking to the family, and his dad gets on the phone and says, well, we got a different plan for him. Okay, well, thank you and have a good day. What I'm telling you is how they handled this and perpetuated it throughout the course of the draft. He could have easily been drafted earlier if, in fact, Mike, they wanted to do that. But I just felt like they kept pushing and pushing back. And when you do that, guess what? You slide. And so now the irony to all of this is, and I think O said it. Who was it on ESPN who said what they – who was it? I want to –
Lewis Riddick.
Okay, it was Lou. Right. Who said now that he's been drafted, it doesn't matter. He's got to go do the work. But when you talk about this, please understand that it was not some conspiracy by the NFL. It was not anybody holding a young brother down. This was perpetrated by himself and – his people. You know who his people is? His dad.
Right.
So let's not go above and beyond what we say, oh, man, they're trying to do this. It's Prime and his son. And look, I get it. We have seen that in the past. There's no debating. There have been situations where guys have not been drafted for X amount of reasons, and maybe that was one of them. That was not this. I've told you from the start, he's really good. He can play. He's about to go figure it out, Mike, and see if he can earn a spot with the Cleveland Browns, whose quarterback room is crowded now. But these are the kind of things that happened over the weekend, guys, as he continued to slide and everybody was losing their mind as to why is this going on.
Now, again, because it was considered such a top-heavy draft, and again, everyone will watch, and I mean specifically the Jackson Dart thing. I mean, you talked about when Shuck went to New Orleans. I was like, you got to be freaking kidding me.
I know.
You know, but this goes back, guys. And I said this over the weekend on social media. I mean, not many dads can say they got two sons on an NFL roster in 1 year, because both Shiloh did get picked up as an undrafted free agent. But the hubris, the ego, and I'm a biggest Deion fan. I bought the damn sunglasses. I love the guy. I mean, Florida State all the way. But, I mean, it did kind of, they overplayed their hands. I think you saw some of that at the combine. Remember when Deion kind of came back and said, well, I'm not going to be involved with my son's NFL. See, they overdid it. So I just think, guys, it's like everything else in sports or life today, it becomes a zero-sum argument. You know, he got screwed. Well, is there any personal responsibility in the Sanders camp for how this thing went down? No. And then, you know, as I said, it just sort of snowballs into this where you look at everybody who got drafted before him. There's a lot of ones that left us scratching our heads, and I get it. Now he's got to – and by the way, I don't know if you make an NFL team – being as deep down on the depth chart. He's going to have to beat out Dylan Gabriel. Mm-hmm. I think he's better than Pickett right now. Mm-hmm. And then eventually Flacco is probably going to say, hey, you take all the reps you want this summer. But it's hard. I mean, I don't know what the precedent here is for a guy who we think he's got that talent. Unless here's the one thing which maybe nobody wants to admit, including Mel Kiper. Maybe he's just a really great college quarterback who won't be a great pro quarterback.
And that's very possible. And, Mike, let me say this. In the third round, you don't think that they would have taken him there? Instead of Gabriel, they took Gabriel thinking, all right, well, you know what? We're moving on. Right. They had moved on. You get two rounds later and the dude's still on the board. And all of a sudden now you're like, well, this is great value. He's still the highest rated prospect on the board for anybody left in the NFL at that point. And you're going, nobody's taking him? There was a reason. And let me say this too. Black general managers passed on Shador.
Say what? What? What'd you say?
Black general managers also passed on Shador. There's no conspiracy. The way you handle these situations and how you go about them matters. And when people are trying to reach out to you, Mike, and I'm telling you these are facts, and they're trying to say, hey, I want you to be a part of this thing.
So they're throwing you a lifeline.
And you are responding in these ways. You're not I'm good. Like, you've told me everything I need to know, regardless of what interview I've had with you, regardless of what your tape says, which the tape is great. The interview process, some of that is hit and miss. But part of that was, again, he was speaking as if he was accomplished. Right. You haven't accomplished jack.
Right.
You hadn't done anything. You're just like everybody, other quarterbacks coming in the league. So you have to have some humility there, man. And part of this was, I'm going to kind of pick my spot. Well, you picked it all the way to the fifth round, and now you got a battle.
Yeah, and so there's part of it. But you're not necessarily going to get that on first take, okay, because everything becomes a victimization argument, which was driving me crazy at times. Now, the prank, we talked about that earlier, that's a different kettle of fish.
It is.
It's a completely different thing. But, I mean, and look, it's immature. It's embarrassing for Jackson's family, and the dad's got to deal with this, and the Falcons. The NFL is investigating, by the way, because I think they want to know how the information was compromised. But as Carlos said, if the computer's open. But I mean, you and I were debating this earlier. I mean, don't mess with your dad's money, man. Very immature.
Yeah, and look, only they know, or Jax knows. I said my guess is, you come home. How many times do you come home with your kids and you leave stuff out? You don't expect your kid's not taking your American Express card. He's not going in your iPad or your phone. Like, and if it's open and your phone doesn't have a lock on it, and your kid, how many times your kids grab your phone and they just scroll through? Right. Like that kind of stuff happens, and I'm saying this, I don't know how it played out, but my guess is, Mike, if it was open, there are a bunch of names and phone numbers there with their numbers in the NFL that they're supposed to call, and you start scrolling through, and you're going, oh, look who's new here. Man, who else is in here? Maybe that's how it played out. Either way, not funny.
Yep, and as we said, I mean, you've created a – and by the way, to get the facts right for guys who missed it earlier, there were multiple players who got prank calls about where they were being selected during the course of the weekend. Jax Ulbrich's only related to the Shudor Sanderson, for which he apologized.
Thank you.
Again, I just said this to Carl. I don't have any kids. I don't know how Jeff is going to handle this. That's his business. But I know a lot of folks feel how they should be handling the situation.
Yeah, I just – when you're talking about an older young man, this is not a 13-year-old.
No.
You've got to, and I made mistakes at 21. You've got to say, hey, look, not cool, and explain, and hopefully he learns from this, and we can all move forward. But I think the fact that that Shador accepted the apology, and the young man had enough, wherewithal, Mike, to be like, okay, we got to call and apologize. That was the right thing to do. We had a poll up today talking about this with Falcon fans asking you, did you feel like the Falcons should have been punished for this? The league is not come down with anything, and I suspect they won't. But what's the poll look like, Dede?
Yeah, close to 800 votes, man. And we simply asked, are you okay with the Falcons' decision saying that they won't take any action against Ulbrich? 86% saying yes, they're okay with that decision.
Okay, right. That's good. No, that really is.
Like I said, I mean, we said this earlier, I just don't know what there's a lot of folks on social media, and some of these are famous athletes, whether it could be any sport, and like there's got to be, what consequence? Okay, what? You want to fly him down to Singapore and get him caned? I don't know what you're talking about. Yeah, I mean, I said this to Carl earlier, I'm doing making excuses, because I don't like children, any kind of children, no matter what their age is, under 21. But in the case of, this isn't like Bart Simpson, like pranking the bar, Hey, is there a man to hug and kiss there? And then Mo gets out there, I'm looking for a man to hug and kiss. You're getting a guy at his most vulnerable. But as I said earlier, let's not cry me too much a river, because this is a guy who's kind of, he created this scenario for himself in the draft that Carl laid out. So a lot of overreactions, a lot of hype, a lot of hyperbole on this one, and hopefully cooler heads will prevail.
All right, man, let's get out of here and clear our throat. Chasing some people tomorrow to continue our quest to talk about the draft, including our buddy Brian Baldinger. We're chasing a bunch of other football guests throughout the course of the week, guys. We'll see what the Braves do, and also, NBA playoffs, they've been great, by the way. Right. Mike, we've just had so much on our plate with
the
Falcons.
See Ant-Man get up on LeBron?
Man, listen.
He wants that smoke.
He may be the best player in the league right now, and we just don't see him that way. We're talking about all these other guys. It may be Atlanta's own Anthony Edwards.
Hey.
We'll talk more about that. What are you talking about? What was that for?
Well, you make jokes, by the way. This Ant-Man, to say yours is bigger than fan, very unprofessional. Although, based on who was sitting courtside, relatively a true statement.
I was going to say, thank you, Virtual Luca. We'll get more of that tomorrow as well, man. Make sure you're here. Hey, coming up, Chris has got you. Stay right there, 6 o'clock. He'll be talking about all the things and extending everything that we've been discussing as well. So don't go anywhere. Day-Day, great job as always. Executive producing, Big O.
our engineer, Mike Bell. Let's clear our throats.
Hey, man, drafting and giving grades on the drafts, I mean, to me, it's just the silliest thing. Everybody's got to do it. Every editor expects his reporter to give me a grade. I need a grade. Fail. D minus. See, Falcons got everything from an A minus to a C minus. It all depends on what you think of James Pierce Jr. But again, we're not going to know. Now, hopefully, we will know early in the season when this guy's ripping somebody's freaking head off and it's a quarterback. But in some cases, it takes a year or two. Hopefully not too long, because he is a first-round pick. Mm.